Hello, this is Pat, and I am reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, January the 9th. I hope you're having a good day. Let's begin on the front page with the 2025 Clinton Journal, part two of the year in review. This begins with July. The city began examining the next steps towards restoring the old ironwork bridge in the cemetery. Resident Doug Graves earlier asked the council to consider saving the bridge for its historical significance. Commissioner Dan Ballinger said a structural and environmental study on the bridge would cost about $25,000, and commissioners would need to decide if they wanted to move forward. Friends of Baltimore was voted viewers' favorite in the annual Quilted Keepsakes Quilt Show at the DeWitt County Museum. Goose Creek Library, DeLand, received a technology grant to buy computers, a new router, and several Wi-Fi extenders. County Zoning Commissioner Elizabeth Weigel reported three solar companies applied for the first site hearings in the county. The first hearing was scheduled for August 12th for Prairie Flats Solar, LLC. A group of volunteers formed to perform some work around Clinton. Mayor Michalossi reported several residents offered their time, and one of the first projects was the improvement of the Welcome to Clinton signs. Moving to August, Nelson Thorpe presented a story of his father Ernest's World War II aviation career. Thorpe was a B-17 pilot whose plane was shot down over the North Sea during the war. Thorpe and his crew were subsequently taken prisoner and held at the camp, later made famous in the film The Great Escape. A freeze at IDOT, funding declared delayed annual work to township roads. IDOT froze funds to the county because paperwork compiled by the highway department was not up to date, owing at least in part to a staff shortage at the department. The situation was eventually rectified. Board member Christina Deerwister resigned from the county board after her objection over a special use permit for a kennel. Deerwister objected to what she felt was a willingness to approve the permit without specific ordinance language to address the situation. The Clinton Journal announced the newspaper had been purchased by Billy McMacken, former COO with News Media Corp. McMacken also purchased the Normalite newspaper group to form McMacken Multimedia. News Media Corp. declared bankruptcy last summer, leaving some of the company's profitable newspapers, including the Journal, potentially in limbo. The Journal now operates as part of the Normalite newspaper group. The county board rejected a solar company's site application after adding a condition to the application at the last minute. The board added a condition to the application from Prairie Flats Solar that was not part of the county's application process. The county's state attorney said he felt the condition would become more restrictive than state code, which is prohibited. The board voted 6-5 to reject the application after voting 6-5 to impose the additional requirement. During a later meeting, the board reversed its decision. County Highway Department workers and their representatives addressed county board members to urge them to intervene in contract talks. Union members said they felt disrespect from the county's labor attorney and that the board members had little understanding about the job their unions do. And in September, the county's board land use committee discussed possible conflicts with the state in the county's solar energy code. Board Chairman Joe Witt felt the county's ordinance should be examined for possibly over-restrictive portions, which would violate the state's green energy statutes. The Vault Teen Center received $40,600 grant from Taco Bell. The grant was part of $28 million in community grants awarded by Taco Bell in 2025. The county announced work on a cyber attack plan to protect county information systems. County IT Chairman Patrick Ryan said his committee was working with Heart Technologies to set up a process for cyber incident response. October. The new playground located at Kiwanis Park was dedicated by former Clinton Police Chief Michael Reedy. The new area was replaced the former alternate play space, which had fallen into disrepair and was a victim of vandalism. Clinton Lake Ducks Unlimited dedicated a new disabled accessible duck blind at Clinton Lake in memory of the late member Bob Ryman. Fundraising began early in 2025. The duck blind was built with the cooperation of the IDNR, or state-managed property at the lake. Owners of the former Arcosa Wind Tower plant announced the plant would go back into production under Meyer Utility Structures to manufacture electric transmission structures for the electric power industry. Doug Graves, owner of Graves Stationers, announced he would close his store after 40 years. Graves owned and operated Crestview Nursing Home until the mid-1980s. He opened Graves Stationeries in December of 1985. The Clinton School Board returned to the proposed restructuring plan for Douglas and Lincoln Elementary Schools. Members of the steering committee covered the building floor plans and identified needs across each school. And in November, Clinton Crime Stoppers announced it was disbanding after 39 years. A lack of volunteers and a decline of operational funds coming from the courts were the primary reasons. An anonymous donor gave $800,000 to benefit three local nonprofit agencies. Through the Heart of Illinois Community Foundation, the donor gave $500,000 to Clinton Community YMCA, $200,000 to Encore, and $100,000 to Community Care Center. A worker was accidentally electrocuted at Clinton Power Station. A spokesman for Constellation, the plant's owner, said the company was prepared to support its employees and contractors affected by the event. And now, finally, wrapping up the year, December. Tom Ferris was appointed to fill a county seat left vacant by the resignation of Christina Dierwester. The appointment occurred in November. A fire destroyed a warehouse at the Evergreen FS, Wapella. Multiple fire departments responded to the scene, which required 8 tankers to help supply water. The fire was reported by a conservation police officer. The building contained seed corn, equipment, and some tires. Clinton received an update on its downtown water project. Engineering included plans for improvements at the water treatment plant, the well houses in Kiwanis Park, replacements of a Quincy Street water main, and demolition of the old tower. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced renewal of the operating license for the Clinton Green Energy Center, the Clinton Power Station. The NRC approved a 20-year initial license renewal for the Clinton plant. And another front page story, Clintonia Eagle closes January the 5th, by Gordon Woods. Clinton, the Clintonian Eagle Theater, along with the Eagle Theaters in Robinson and Streeter, close permanently effective January the 5th. The foreclosure legal notice and notice of sheriff's sale appear in this week's journal. The closures are attributed to the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the growth of streaming services and challenges in the film industry in general. Owner Eric Gubelman, in a Facebook post, said that while there was strong community support for the theaters, financial support to continue operations was not forthcoming. Avatar: Fire and Ash was the final film exhibited at the theaters. Gobelman has, in the past, cited the difficulty of independently owned theaters to survive against the large chain operators. Guberman wrote in his Facebook post that it was clear from past 2 years survival was unlikely without recapitalization. This may not be quite the end of the story, even if the main arc has been resolved, Guberman said. 6 months ago, we assumed any attempt at revival would mean negotiating with multiple creditors, a maze of competing interests, and very little daylight. The foreclosure process has, paradoxically, simplified things. There may be soon a single bank, a single decision maker, a clean opportunity to move the building off the books and forward into something new. Our investor has indicated a willingness to participate in that process if his prerequisite project clears its final hurdles. It's also possible that another entrepreneur, a theater group, or a community-minded buyer takes a look and asks whether there's still a viable future here. If that happens, we may be able to offer consulting help, context, and hard-earned lessons. Guberman said that he and his daughter and theater staff were still prepared to carry on if the opportunity materializes. Guberman was scheduled to address the city council this week about the closure. And now, turning to some state news. New laws, Illinois grocery tax to end, aquifer protections begin. In a story from the Capital News Illinois by Ben Zielinski and Brendan Moore. Illinois statewide 1% grocery tax will go away on January 1st, though many people will continue to pay it at the local level. Data compiled by the Illinois Municipal League shows that 656 municipalities, a little more than half of the state's municipalities, have passed an ordinance establishing their own grocery tax. These communities are home to 7.2 million, or 56.5% of the state's population. Three counties, Washington, Wabash, and Moultrie, have also approved countywide grocery taxes. Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a bill in 2024 eliminating the 1% statewide grocery tax, which he touted as a measure to ease residents' tax burden. But because the revenue from the state grocery tax went to municipal governments rather than the state coffers, the measure allowed local governments to levy their own 1% tax via ordinance rather than a referendum to voters. Here are some other laws that will come into effect. Hotel soaps phased out. The phase-out of small, single-use plastic bottles in Illinois hotel room continues. Senate Bill 2960, passed and signed into law 2024, bars hotels from providing toiletries such as shampoo, conditioner, and bath soap in less than 6 ounce plastic containers unless specifically requested by the hotel guest. The ban took effect in hotels with 50 or more rooms on July the 1st and takes effect for all hotels starting in 2026. Hotels in violation will receive a written warning for the first offense and be subject of fines up to $1,500 for each subsequent violation. The legislation is intended to spur the state's hospitality industry to reduce its plastic footprint by shifting to either refillable toiletry containers or larger plastic bottles. Similar laws have been enacted in states like California, New York, and Washington. Squatter removal. Senate Bill 1563 will make it easier for authorities to remove squatters who are illegally staying at someone else's residence. The law clarifies that a court-ordered eviction is not required for police to remove squatters from a person's home, and police can enforce criminal trespassing charges against the squatter. Pritzker signed the bill in July after squatters moved into a home next door to Representative Marcus Evans in Chicago. According to ABC Channel 7, Chicago police told homeowners they couldn't remove the squatters from the home and the homeowners would have to go through the eviction process in Cook County Court, which can take months. Drinking water protections. Senate Bill 1723 bans carbon sequestration, the process of capturing and storing carbon by injecting it underground within an area of overlays, underlays, or passes through U.S. Environmental Protection Agency designated sole source aquifer. The new law applies to the footprint of the Mahomet Aquifer, which is the main source of drinking water for more than 500,000 people across a 15-county area in central Illinois. It comes as Illinois, especially downstate, is targeted for carbon sequestration projects due to the state's favorable geology and the availability of federal tax credits. Studies, including those conducted by researchers at the University of Illinois, have found minimal risk to water sources from sequestration activity. But the legislation was a priority for Central Illinois community activists, environmental advocates, and a bipartisan cadre of local lawmakers with zero risk tolerance due to the lack of clear alternative water source if the aquifer were tainted. Safer gear for firefighters. Illinois will take the first steps towards requiring safer gear for firefighters. Under House Bill 2409, manufacturers of firefighter turnout gear starting in 2026 must provide written notice if their products contain PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. Numerous scientific studies have linked exposure to PFAS an increased risk of developing various forms of cancer. Manufacturers will be banned from selling turnout gear and personal protective equipment containing PFAS altogether starting on January the 1st, 2027. In other news, we have several obituaries this morning. Ronald E. Dury, Sr. The last name is spelled D-U-R-R-E. Chatsworth, Illinois. Ronald E. Dury, Sr. of Chatsworth, Illinois, formerly of Strawn, peacefully passed from time into eternity in his heavenly home on the morning of Thursday, December 18th. At Ronald's request, cremation rites have been accorded. A celebration through visitation was held on Sunday, January the 4th, in Duffy Pills Memorial Home in Fairbury. A private memorial service and interment will be held at a later date. Mary Sandra Stapleton of Clinton. Mary Sandra Stapleton, 83, of Clinton, passed away at 1:25 p.m. on January the 5th, 2026, at Copper Creek Villages in Lincoln. Services will be conducted at 11 a.m. on Saturday, January the 10th, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Cody Monkman officiating. Burial will follow at Mausoleum Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. In Clinton, Glenna Arlene Sears Willis, 71, of Clinton, passed away at 4:24 p.m. on January the 2nd, 2026, at her home in Clinton. Celebration of Glenna's life will be held from 1 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, January the 17th, at Eagles Lodge in Clinton. The family entrusted Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton with cremation rites. Wilma Lee Watson Simpson. The last name is spelled S-Y-M-P-S-O-N. Wilma Lee Watson Simpson, 98, of Clinton, passed away at 4:45 a.m. January the 5th at Vonderleith Living Center in Mount Pulaski. Her visitation was held on Thursday, January the 8th at the Calvert Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Friday, January the 9th at 11 a.m. at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Pastor Jonathan Roberson officiating. Interment will follow at Memorial Park Cemetery in Clinton. From the op-ed page, When I Went West 36 Years Ago, in the Dear Clinton column by Joe Mellon. Happy New Year, Clinton. I met poor old man on the north side throwing frisbees if it's not too cold or wet. Back in 1988, I won an essay contest I saw in the Decatur Herald and Review newspaper, which posed the question, why do you call Decatur home? They published my essay, made me an ambassador for a day, and gave me a bunch of cool gifts worth $1,500. 2 years later, I would not be calling Decatur or Illinois home. I had been working at the Decatur Firestone Tire Plant since graduating from Millikan University in 1981 with an industrial engineering degree. Firestone offered an attractive voluntary reduction in force package to employees in late 89, which I found very tempting. My parents and sisters had moved to California and Florida 5 years earlier. I had a totally different career path I was hoping to try, and there was nothing else holding me back. I took the package, sold my house, sold or gave away most of my stuff, bought and loaded up an 83 Chevy cargo van, and headed west. Before I left, Ray Buchanan, Firestone's engineering department manager, wandered into my accounting department's cubicle one day. With a puzzled look, he asked, "So you're quitting your job and hitting the road with no job or prospects?" I nodded with a smile. He smiled back and said, "Son, people have been known to die doing stuff like that." I've often wondered ever since whether he was giving me a warning or a compliment. My first stop was Austin, Texas, in March of 1990. No friends or family there, just a business and some people who were working in or actively learning the same passion I had acquired 3 years earlier. I attended local lectures and workshops teaching aspects of my new career choice. The live band scene on 6th Street was fantastic. Folks in general were so unbelievably friendly, I was always looking around for Alan Funk and the Candid Can camera crew. LOL. The thing I remember most vividly and fondly about 1990 Austin was shopping at the Whole Foods supermarket. It had been around for a few years, but everything still had that fresh, homemade feel and look. The overall vibe while buying organic groceries or walking through the parking lot was warm and inviting. There was always a long line of folks getting delicious free-squeezed juice from hard-working team of juicers, and all the employees seemed to smile all the time and treat each other like loving family members. Moving to a new area of the country always has its fair share of frustration, excitement, disappointment, and discovery. I experienced all of that in various ways and to varying degrees in the 7 major moves I've made so far. While it may take me a while to fully learn and adjust to each cultural rhythm and social value system, it soon became part of my daily life. What about you? Have you lived in different parts of our country or Illinois and noticed how the offerings of successful products and services in those areas reflect and support the unique value system of each area? Just moving to another neighborhood in your hometown can be eye-opening experience, as many of you know. Happy 2026, Clinton. See you next week. Born in Springfield, Joe Mellon is a graduate of SDHS and Millikan University in Decatur. He worked as an industrial engineer and accountant at the Decatur Firestone Tire Plant until 1990, raised a family in Georgia, wrote and published a book, and is happy to be back in central Illinois. In more state news, the report, more people continue leaving Illinois than arriving. Glenn Minnis, the Center Square. From Springfield, Illinois State Representative Martin McLaughlin argues lawmakers in Springfield only look in the mirror to come face to face with the source of the state's dwindling appeal. The new Atlas Van Lines report details how Illinois outbound migration levels in 2025 again topped the number of new move-ins to the state, marking the 17th straight year that trend has festered. While this year's ratio reflects the smallest gap between new move-ins and those leaving the state since 2008, staffers nonetheless found 54% of the company's clients last year were on the move out of Illinois. Even the Chicago Bears are finding Illinois less appealing and can't get a deal, McLaughlin, a Republican of Barrington Hills, told the Center Square. It's the policy climate that is about taxing businesses and individuals first and delivering services last. We are the highest tax state in the nation, and what do we get for that? What we're getting is more corruption, more political payoffs. Particularly the public sector unions are the ones that are getting paid off. U.S. Census Bureau data showing Illinois has lost around 420,000 residents since 2020. Recent polling found almost half of all voters insist they would leave the state if they had the chance. Updated annual census estimates for Illinois and other states are expected later this month. McLaughlin said the time for voters to take a stand is now. We have over 82 line items in our state tax code, the Illinois Department of Revenue, and people in Springfield just keep looking to add more, he said. It has gone beyond what our founders intended, and the only way to do this is to have a revolution at the ballot box. Previous Atlas studies highlight outmigration peaked across the state in 2023 with 63% of all movers heading for new confines. More recently, pollsters found residents point to high taxes as the state's top issue. And now for some sports. Lady Hawks, No Competition for Lady Maroons at Home by Mark Rogers. The Clinton Lady Maroons hosted the low-flying Lady Hawks of Riverton on Saturday, January the 3rd. The home team was 12-4, while the Lady Hawks were 1-16. The Lady Hawks found no solace on Jean Vance Court. The Lady Maroons easily took the first quarter 20-0. The second quarter, the Lady Hawks scored a basket while the home team put up another 20 points to go to the locker room with a 40-2 lead at the half. The game resumed after halftime, and the Lady Maroons did not let up, scoring 24 points, while the opposition could only muster 4 points. The fourth quarter brought out more attention to the game as both games put in their second-string players. Riverton was able to score 5 points in the final stanza as the Lady Maroons added 8 points. The Lady Maroons were led by Clara Dempsey with 17 points, including 2 3-pointers, followed by Carly Anderson with 16 points, including 4 trays. Avi Smith added 15 points with 1 3-pointer, and Ozzy Gore rounded out the double-digit crew with 10 points. Riverton had no one in double figures. Clinton Lady Maroons are now 13-4, while Riverton's Lady Hawks fall to 1-17. Maroons Stay Close But Fall to Hornets by Mark Rogers. In Clinton, on the evening of January the 3rd, the Clinton Maroons hosted the Eureka Hornets to a basketball game on the Jean Vance Court. Hopes were high for the hometown Maroons as they had just beaten the 14-0 Leroy Panthers the night before. The Eureka Hornets had other plans, though. As the game began, the Maroons had a hard time finding the basket, while the Hornets were hitting 2s and 3s consistently. The first quarter ended with the home team down 20-10. In the second quarter, the Maroons held their own, scoring 1 less than the opposition. Coming out of the locker room and after the half, the Maroons looked more confident and again kept pace with the Hornets, coming up 1 bucket short for the second time and leading the home team by 12 points heading into the final quarter. The Maroons put out a tremendous effort in the final stanza of the game, outscoring the Hornets 21-15, but coming up 6 points shy of a tie and 7 points shy of the win. The Maroons were led by Keaton Graves with 21 points, including 2 3-pointers, followed by Keegan Doherty with 16 points and 4 trays, and Jaden Bell with 13 points, including 2 3-pointers. The Maroons are now 11-5 overall in the season. Eureka was led by Connell Roth with 21 points, including 1 3-pointer, and Grant Roberts with 10 points, including 2 trays. The Hornets leave with a 9-4 record. And with that, I will leave you and hope that you enjoy the rest of your day, and I will be back again with you next week.